Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, January 23rd, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Got to get things started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
Yes, sir. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, we're in danger of forgetting that we cannot do what God does and that God will not do what we should do for ourselves. Ah, yes. This is why we always have something to do.
We're burning daylight.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Here we go.
Twisted history.
Should be good.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
I'm counting on it.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See, there you go. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1957, American inventor Walter Frederick Morrison sold the rights to his flying disc to the Wham-O Toy Company, which later renamed it the Frisbee. Proved to be a useful tool for guys with a dog to meet chicks. Think about that one. And it was on this day in 2003, a very weak signal from Pioneer 10 was detected for the last time, but no usable data could be extracted. You know, it's the same problem we always have with MSNBC.
Yes, I can hear sets being clicked off all over this great land of ours.
As you no doubt know, you and I are being watched by our federal government. And I'd be willing to bet that even after Donald Trump retakes the White House, we'll still be watched by the feds, because it's going to take a long time for him to weed out these nefarious organizations and individuals within organizations in our federal government who are spying on us. But Mark Tapscott, writing in the Epoch Times, says that Senator Tim Scott, good Republican out of South Carolina, wants to know who at the Department of Treasury approved searches of Americans' private financial accounts for transactions for religious texts. Which books, if any, were singled out, and why this sort of purchases were assumed to indicate that an individual was involved in domestic violent terrorism. Now, I don't believe for 1 minute that this is really the reason why our government is spying on us, that they're looking for domestic terrorists. I think they're just looking for simple political opposition. And then they want to single us out. And they want to attack our candidates. They want to attack our ability to be able to cast a vote. Make no mistake about it, this is what's going on here. Now, in a January 19th letter to Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, and Andrea Gacky, who was the director of the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, Tim Scott said such searches represent a flagrant violation of Americans' privacy and the improper targeting of U.S. citizens for exercising their constitutional rights without due process. You do not need a law degree to understand that. So Mr. Scott, who's the ranking Republican member on the Senate Banking Committee, ask Ms. Yellen and Ms. Gacky which religious texts were flagged as potentially indicative of extremism. Who made the decision for Treasury to warn financial institutions that religious texts may indicate extremism? And then Mr. Scott went on to write that federal government efforts to target individuals and entities based on their political views is a blatant and egregious violation of our Constitution. And reported actions like these disrupt confidence in federal law enforcement and raise significant questions regarding the independence of federal financial regulators. All good points. So the South Carolina Republican lawmakers' demands were sparked by the House Judiciary Committee's January 17th release of documents describing a joint operation involving the Financial Center, which is part of the Treasury Department, and the FBI, in which federal officials encouraged the searches with the results to be shared with the government. So, yeah, they're spying on you. They're spying on us. And you have to wonder, was there a warrant sworn out for these searches? So the religious texts search term was among many federal officials asked financial institutions to use following the January 6th debacle. And a congressional source with direct knowledge confirmed to the Epoch Times on January 18th all of this, that other terms that banks, credit card companies, and financial firms were asked to use in the searches included MAGA and Trump, according to the House Judiciary Committee. You see, the picture we're getting here isn't a very good one, not at all. I mean, it's not just the fact that they're spying on you, but they're in the process of spying on you. They're also working to demonize you. So House Judiciary Committee Jim Jordan of Ohio, this guy's great. He said, freedom of religion is a fundamental right enshrined in the Constitution. It should frighten every American that the federal government's watching people based on their purchases. This is as wrong as it gets, and we're going to continue to expose this blatant attack on faith and civil liberties. Now, multiple religious liberty advocates also have been talking. They said the searches represent a serious threat to constitutional liberties. But here again, this is very fundamental. You don't need somebody on the outside to tell you that. You understand this. They, meaning these people in the government who are launching these searches, have no right. And they're doing this without warrants. Kelly Shackelford, who's president of the Plano, Texas-based First Liberty Institute, said it's outrageous and frankly chilling that the federal government may be urging banks to monitor Americans for exercising their religious freedom by simply purchasing a Bible or other religious text. Weaponizing the federal government against religious Americans, freely exercising their constitutionally protected freedom, is outrageous. It's a danger to all our freedoms. It makes a mockery of our laws. When religious people are attacked and religious freedom is not upheld, all other civil liberties, including economic freedom, soon start crumbling. And they're right. In addition to the specific information that Tim Scott is seeking from Treasury officials, he's also asking to see a host of documents, communications, and names in order to construct the complete decision tree that culminated in the decision to encourage the controversial searches by the financial companies on behalf of the government. Now, Scott told the Treasury Secretary that he wants to know the specifics of that department's role in the searches, including the role played in convening meetings, virtual or otherwise, the dissemination of information, and collecting post-search information from the financial institutions. Now, you may be wondering, how does this affect me? Does it even affect me at all? Yes, it does. Especially if you make most of your major purchases through credit cards. I used to poo-poo the idea of using my credit card to buy my groceries, but not anymore. I don't use debit cards anymore because I think the security of debit cards can be too easily breached. But I use my credit cards, haven't had any incidents. And then, of course, I pay those bills each month. I like the convenience of the credit card. But the problem with the credit card, though, and it may actually prompt me to come off of the credit card purchases and go back to cash. Because credit cards are so easily traced. So, Scott also is looking for information on whether anyone from another executive branch department or agency, you know, something like the Department of Justice or the FBI, ever direct, request, engage in, or encourage Treasury to engage in such reported activities. Sounds like he's being pretty thorough about this, and he's going to have to be. And then in addition, he asked Ms. Yellen and Ms. Gackey if an independent financial regulatory agency like the Federal Reserve, FDIC, or OCC, which is the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, ever direct, request, engage in, or encourage Treasury to engage in such reported activities. And then at the end of the article in Epoch Times, and again, I want to give the byline because Mark Tapscott is pretty good writer. At the very end, he said that Epoch Times got no response from a Treasury Department spokesman. Because they always do that. When they publish an article like this, they go to the source, they want to get comments. And more often than not, I pour through these issues of Epoch Times every single day. And I am amazed at the number of times they try to contact spokespersons to comment on something that they just finished an article on and nobody responds. I love to sink my teeth into stuff like this. UFC President Dana White confronted a Canadian journalist following UFC 297, emphasizing his stance on free speech within the UFC. Now, the incident happened during the post-fight press conference when this weaselly Canadian reporter questioned White on the perceived latitude, and perhaps there's a key word there, perceived. Because it's purely up to the person who's doing the perceiving, you know, the person with the perception. But he questioned White on the perceived latitude given to UFC fighters regarding their public statements, implying that it may lead to homophobia and transphobia. So here's the audio.
You obviously give a long leash to your fighters about, you know, what they can say when they are up there with a UFC microphone and you are getting into territory of homophobia, transphobia. Like, is there...
I don't give anybody a leash.
Well, I'm saying you...
A leash?
Like...
Free speech. I control what people say. Gonna tell people what to believe. Gonna tell people... I don't tell any other human being what to say, what to think, and there's no leashes on any of them. What is your question?
I was asking that question. I'll move on, though.
Yeah, probably a good idea. That's ridiculous to say I give somebody a leash. Free speech, brother. People can say whatever they want, and they can believe whatever they want.
Absolutely beautiful. And did you catch how that reporter just, all of a sudden, that weaselly little reporter just started to recoil? Now, the confrontation at the press conference comes after middleweight title holder Sean Strickland launched a verbal tirade against Canadian reporters. It's about time somebody did. Addressing his past comments about gays and Bud Light, Strickland doubled down. He said, here's the thing about Bud Light. 10 years ago, to be trans was what? A mental effing disease. And now all of a sudden, people like you have weaseled your way into the world. You're an infection. You're the definition of weakness. Everything that's wrong with the world is because of you. Of course, he dropped an F-bomb in there, too. But Strickland was obviously very pissed off. And then he went on. He says, the best thing is the world's not buying it. The world's not buying your effing bull. Your effing peddling. The world is not saying, you know what, you're right. And... he said something else there that I'm not going to repeat here, but it had to do with men parading around as women. He said, the world's not saying that. The world's saying, no, there are two genders. I don't want my kids being taught about who they would F in school. I don't want my kids being taught about their sexual preference. Like, dude, this guy is the enemy. You want to look at the enemy to our world? It's that MF-er right there asking these stupid effing questions. And I find it rather interesting that you have to go to the UFC to get some honest dialogue about this baloney. How many genders do these idiots now claim there are? Because you are whatever you perceive yourself to be. Well, you know what? You can still do that. If you want to do that, that's fine. But you better be prepared to get the criticism, because you're going to get the criticism in a society like ours where we still, in spite of everything that's been going down here, we still cherish free speech. And I don't know, but if I were a betting man, I'd bet that the United States of America is going to continue to champion free speech. In fact, I don't know about you, but I've been detecting my little pendulum detector. It's kind of been detecting the pendulum swinging back our way. Nobody's trying to be homophobic. You want to hear a gay person talk about this very same subject matter? Listen to Dave Rubin. You know, this is not about being gay or straight. This is about who starts to control the morality and the dialogue in our society. And the mainstream media is always more than happy to just pile on with the extreme leftists because the media themselves are leftists. They're all leftists. It's like I've said dozens of times before. It's very difficult to find a military veteran, an American military veteran, among the ranks of mainstream media reporters and journalists, so-called journalists. And they know they control the direction that our society goes. And the reason they're able to do that is because people like you and I allow them to do it. We allow it. Hell, we even encourage it by continuing to subscribe to their newspapers and watch their TV channels. When you do that, that's as good as just putting money in their little tin cup. Same thing goes for supporting the sponsors of their publications or their media outlets. You buy the products that advertise on those channels or inside those newspapers and magazines. You know, nobody's trying to restrict anybody, okay? Best analogy that I can draw, and I've done this before. I'm heterosexual. You don't see me holding parades, running up and down the street with a bullhorn yelling, I'm hetero, I'm hetero, I like women. You don't see me doing that. So is the gay pride parade with those obscene hats, is that really necessary? I mean, are you that starved for self-esteem? I would argue your problem isn't about your sexual preference. I think the problem goes far deeper than that. It's a psychological problem, and I'll bet you it's pretty hard to pronounce. Rachel Emanuel, writing in the Western Journal, says that when Bud Light decided to partner with transgender activist Dylan Mulvaney, who doesn't remember that, for an ad campaign last April, the company set off a conservative firestorm. Well, conservative media outlets and personalities like Kid Rock led a boycott that was more effective than anyone could have predicted, battering sales and the brand's reputation in a way few modern activism-inspired backlashes have managed. It was an interesting chapter. But the result wasn't only lost sales and market position. It also damaged something that you can't really measure the way you can other things like sales figures and what have you, and that's the goodwill with a large section of beer drinkers. Bud Light became a political lightning rod. I would even argue that Anheuser-Busch these days is probably ground zero in the culture wars. I mean, you know that the executives are just wringing their hands these days. Even after Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation Trust bought 1.7 million shares of AB, worth a whopping $95 million, according to CBS News, the beer maker was unable to pull itself up out of the downward spiral. I'd be really concerned these days about a guy like Bill Gates. That guy, that's a topic for another day, though, okay? Now, there was an article published by CNN at the end of December, nearly 9 months after the Dylan Mulvaney debacle, and it revealed that Bud Light was still suffering from depressed sales, surrendering its spot as America's top-selling beer. Yeah, believe it or not, rival Mexican lager Modelo Especial overtook Bud Light as the number one grocery store brew for the first time ever, and this happened back in August. And the hits keep coming. Yeah. Contract negotiations between Anheuser-Busch and a union representing 5,000 of its brewery workers have stalled, prompting strike threats that could halt beer production at 12 facilities across the country. Now, the Teamsters Union, which represents the AB employees, said that they've been in discussion since November, but haven't made much in the way of progress. And central issues around this hubbub include wage increases, job security, and improvements to retirement and benefits. Now, you know, job security, how can you assure somebody job security, especially in an economy like the one we're stuck with right now? You can't guarantee job security. Because if the business loses business, certainly a sufficient amount of business, or even goes out of business, you know, you can't guarantee job security. That's something I've never understood about unions. So, anyhow, one worker was talking to a reporter from the publication The Guardian. He says, when I started, Anheuser-Busch was what you'd consider the top dog. It was the job to have. The pay was great. But with inflation, we're not the top paying job. Well, that's true. And the inflation really isn't Anheuser-Busch's fault, unless, of course, they really supported the campaign of Joe Biden. Then maybe from that standpoint, it's their fault. But here again, this harebrained decision back in April to launch that stupid advertising campaign with Dylan Mulvaney. I mean, clearly what they were doing in the executive suite at Anheuser-Busch was they were giving this young upstart, this 20-something female who was in the marketing department, they were giving her far more authority than she should have had, than she ever should have had. And she immediately attacked the very segment of American society that buys their product. Too much of a frat boy image. So you're going to change from a frat boy image to a transgender image? But you know, I don't even fault her. I fault the idiot in the executive suite who approved that campaign. How stupid could they have been? So quite frankly, I have no sympathy for Anheuser-Busch. They're getting what they deserve. So you have two sides here. You got the union. You have Anheuser-Busch. The two sides had previously reached a tentative agreement to eliminate the current two-tiered healthcare system. And what that does is that makes newer employees hired after 2019 pay higher costs than longer tenured employees. Now, this issue had caused some pretty severe divisions among workers doing the same jobs but with different benefits. Now, the union also wants contractual guarantees that workers won't lose their jobs or positions during the 5-year contract term. Again, how can any business guarantee that? Especially in a volatile economy like ours. And brewery employees say that they're united and ready to strike over improved wages, benefits, job guarantees if necessary, which could prove, and this is the important part to bear in mind here, this could prove apocalyptic for Anheuser-Busch. Could the brand completely disappear from the American brewing landscape? Most certainly could. Look at other brands of beer that no longer exist. One that comes to mind right off the bat is Falstaff. And the reason I think of Falstaff is because they used to have a big Falstaff brewery down in Galveston many years ago. In fact, I even went to the hospitality suite after a tour. And the building is still there, but it's gutted. I think somebody wanted to buy that building and do something with it. But workers at Anheuser-Busch, listen to this. They voted 99% in favor last month to authorize a strike if no deal is reached before their current contract expires. That happens February 29th. Now, an action like that could bring operations to a standstill completely at their plants in New York, Georgia, Ohio, California, Colorado, Texas, their plant right here in Houston, Florida, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Missouri, and Virginia. A Teamsters post on X warned, without a contract by February 29th, there won't be any beer come March. Oh, there'll be beer. It just won't be from Anheuser-Busch, who now faces immense pressure to address those union demands or risk the first nationwide walkout in its history. That has never happened at Anheuser-Busch before. Of course, Anheuser-Busch is not owned by Anheuser-Busch anymore. It's owned by InBev, which is a European outfit. I think they're French. So for the beer company, which is still struggling mightily to remake its identity with that once wonderfully loyal following they had, a strike of this magnitude It could be fatal. This may not surprise you too much, but a House panel seeking to investigate the J6 Capitol incursion has learned that the hand-picked panel appointed by then-Speaker Nancy Pelosi, when Democrats controlled the House, deleted and encrypted files, according to a new report. Now, Fox News reported that the House Administration Committee's Oversight Subcommittee, which is led by Representative Barry Loudermilk of Georgia, he's a Republican, discovered that 117 files were deleted January 1st of 2023, just before the deadline for Pelosi's panel to share all of its information with the new GOP-controlled panel. Now, that's why I say you shouldn't be too surprised by this. Now, those files, which were also encrypted, have since been recovered because a digital forensics team was hired to scrape the hard drives. But Loudermilk told Fox News, he says, it's obvious that Pelosi's select committee went to great lengths to prevent Americans from seeing certain documents produced in their investigation. It also appears that Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney intended to obstruct our subcommittee by failing to preserve critical information and videos as required by House rules. Now, just so that you know, this guy, Representative Thompson, he's from Mississippi, he's a Democrat. Then, of course, Representative Cheney, Liz Cheney, we all know about her from Wyoming. They were the chairman and vice chairwoman of the J6 committee. So, Loudermilk said, the American people deserve to know the full truth. And Speaker Mike Johnson has empowered me to use all tools necessary to recover these documents to get to the truth. And I will. And he then wrote to Thompson demanding access to the files. He will get access to the files. Because if he doesn't get access to the files, he's going to make a stink. And then by default, so will the American people. Let's move along now to the comedy corner and the oh-so-funny Joe DeVito.
But I've tried using the dating technology. Again, it's not for people my age. It's for millennials and so forth. And I laugh when people say, well, you know, there are options for middle-aged people who want to meet online. Okay, I've seen the commercials for Our Time. That's what they call it. It's the dating site for people over 50. It's Our Time. No, Our Time was 1998. This is not our, this is overtime. It's like sudden death. This is grab a chair before the music stops time. And as far as these profiles go, we need to pass some legislation about these pictures, okay? Some sort of time date stamping. Just write your congressman, because this is... It's supposed to be a recent picture. I see the Hindenburg explosion in the background. Come on. And no Snapchat filters. Okay? How, a woman's got a crown of animated flowers and little hearts. What is she trying to distract me from with all of this fireworks going on in the back? What does she have, some kind of weird mole or a goiter, a mustache? What's happening here? You... No more of this. Look, it's a dating site. There's only one picture we need to see. It should be required for everyone. And that is you, naked, on a scale, holding a bank statement. That's it. Because people are dishonest. And I know it goes both ways, because my female friends tell me that the men online lie about their height. Yes. Which is hilarious, because the whole point is to meet that woman. How do you show up 8 inches shorter than you said you were? What's the plan? You just keep moving around the whole night so she can't get a read on how tall you are? Is that... That's insane. And I say this as a short guy. I'm not trying to fool anyone, mislead you, or create optical illusions. I don't put up pictures of me surrounded by chihuahuas, wearing a top hat and an umbrella. No. I'm honest, and I get punished because I tell women, look, I'm 50, I'm 5'6". They think, He's 73. He's 4 feet tall. I'm not interested.
Get out there and make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.